Happy Tuesday again, and welcome back to another episode of U-Talk here on 101.5 FM UMFM. I'm your host, Ryan Funk, and we have some fantastic interviews for you today. Two different programs and two different angles. With the holiday season on the way, I thought it was important to talk about how critical building community is. So, to do that, I have an interview with Sharon Tapia of Asian Women of Winnipeg, a fantastic group that connects with Asian women, as the name says, here in Winnipeg, to celebrate their accomplishments and lift each other up in challenging times. I also wanted to highlight a segment, U Multicultural's returning program, We Stand Together. To learn more about, and for this segment, we connected with Circles for Reconciliation to find out more about what reconciliation looks like and how we can build a better tomorrow. Let's get into it.
My name is Sharon Tapia, and I'm the founder, president of Asian Women of Winnipeg. We founded this organization in 2014, and we incorporated in 2016. When we started, I didn't realize that time how far we will be going with this. We just wanted to give some platform to women, started celebrating Mother's Day. That's our starting point. And we just wanted to get those ladies out who were serving just to their families and homemakers, all the new immigrant women and grandmothers who has no other excuse to get out of the house. So we started with very small, with one event, and then we grown to, oh my goodness, so many things now.
Well, yeah, your organization has grown so much, and there's so many talented and accomplished women on the team and in the group. It's just truly impressive and awe-inspiring to see what you have done.
Thank you. Thank you. I think that's the best part, but because when we started this organization, the original founder, including myself, we were all self-employed women, I should say. And still now in our board, we have all the self-employed women except one or two who have full-time job. And that's it. I think when people saw the passion of doing all these things, people keep joining and staying. That's how we've grown, and we have such a big board now. Mm-hmm. We are 12 people now, and we have 3 youth members. Many people wanted to join, but it just we have a cap at the moment. But we have so many members, and now we are in the process of making some committees. So the women who wanted to serve and coming up with different ideas what we should be doing. So we're just expanding. We're just exploring. Come and sit. Let's chat and let's see what needed to be done. I don't know where we are going with all this.
Well, that's okay. We can keep
going. Don't really know. We are just growing. That's all we know.
Talking with one of the younger board members, I can't remember her name.
Divya Sharma came.
Yes. Thank you. It's so cool to have someone who's younger, college age, on a board, because typically when people picture a board, they generally think of someone who's like established in their career or are retired or something like that. But having people of all ages to help bring in different ideas. I've had some conversations with people before talking about everyone has blind spots.
Yes.
Right. Different aspects that you don't think about or aren't aware of.
Yes.
So having those diverse thoughts and diverse ages can really help to find out what do we really need? What is the best way to help this grow and celebrate people and, you know, uplift their voices?
Our board have starting from 18 year, who just one of the youth board member just turned 18 last night.
Wow.
And we were celebrating her 18th birthday. From 18 year to 82. So that's the range we have. Different age groups and the advisory board we have. And they bring all the experiences. And the young people, the youth especially, they are facing different challenges.
Mm-hmm.
which we cannot even explain. And our elders, especially the one on advisory, they've gone through so many different experiences. When they were new in this country, no recognition, they were doing all the jobs, whatever they can get. And then comes people like us who came and worked whatever job we could do in the beginning and polishing our experiences and resume and working hard and then establishing ourselves in a different level. And then these kids who are born here, for them, this is their country, right? But you cannot change the color of your skin. You cannot change your roots. So they are seeing different experiences. They are going through different challenges. And they are trying to have their equal rights in this mainstream. And it's amazing to have all different age groups and have everybody on the same board. One thing is common for sure with all age, different ages, that they're all passionate. They all wanted to serve from one reason to the other.
Well, that's who and what you're looking for on a board, right? You want people who are passionate and want to be involved in their community. You don't just want someone who's like, oh, I guess I'll do this in the evenings. You don't want that kind of person. You want someone who's thirsty to make a change.
Yes, who wanted to make a difference. You know, who felt like we have at one of our event, Dr. Zahra, who's on in our board now. She came to one of this event, and she saw all the passion and everything, and she spoke to me on the phone, and I said, we are hosting Lori Miller at RPC Convention Center. Why don't you come and see? And she was so passionate because she's a doctor herself and all the challenges she faced. She's a very educated girl. She's a lawyer in her back home in her country and a doctor on top of it. And she said, I wanted to help all those people who have no clue where to go, how to change their degrees and where to go for certain things. I wanted to do this. For the best part is we didn't have any criteria other than passion. You want to do something? Come on board. We'll give you platform. If you have a passion, go for it. We'll support you. As long as, you know, it's a positive change, it will make people's life better. We are all open. Anybody wants to join today, you know, you don't have to have a chair on the board. Like, you don't have to be right with a position. But you want to make a difference? You have my attention. You have the whole board's attention. As long as we feel, yes, we are working towards a good cause. I don't know where we're going with this. We are just celebrating people's accomplishment. We saw, like, elder generation, we saw they were not celebrating baby girl's birthday. We wanted to celebrate that. We wanted to change people's thinking. Nobody was acknowledging, like, look, okay, if she got a degree or she became a CEO of a certain firm or an institute, it's not a big deal. But it is a big deal.
Of course.
It is a big deal. Because when you have a different color of skin and you are in a different country where your language is even different, the whole culture is different, and you're raising your kids in that atmosphere where you are struggling to keep your identity and at the same time you wanted to mingle.
Yeah, it's that balancing act, right?
Yes.
Like, how do you engross yourself in Canadian and Western culture while maintaining cultural roots?
Yes.
And celebrating those roots.
Yes.
Without losing it. Because, you know, we've had so many conversations with different diasporas and different communities of trying to find that balance. A lot of youth within the Arabic community don't want to learn the Arabic language.
Yes.
They're like, what's the point? I'm here in Canada now.
And I think when I started so many years back, around, I think, 2004, I came in real estate industry. And then in 2008, I joined Folklorama, India Pavilion. And my own kids were very much Canadian, I should say. Very much Canadian.
Yeah.
And I started volunteering with the India Pavilion. And I told my kids, okay, I'm not going to be home for the next 8 days. 8 evenings, because from work I will be going straight to the pavilion, and we are there till maybe midnight most of the time, right? Mm-hmm. And they wanted to come along, and I said, you guys gonna get bored. That's what I thought. And they said, no, we're not gonna stay home. We will go there.
Well, that's great to see you.
And then my I don't know. I never expected that kind of reaction for my kids, because even though I was working as a realtor, I always made sure I'm not missing on my kids' games and the evenings I'm home. Kids came and they saw other kids like them. And they saw them in their ethnic outfits. And they were all Canadians too. And they were all speaking English and their own language. And my kids got so impressed. And guess what? Next day, my husband said, I'm coming too, because it's boring without you guys at home. So that's how this whole journey started. And I said, okay, Prem, what you will do, my husband. And he said, I will volunteer wherever I can. So he met the president, he met the coordinator. He said, I'm at your service. Whatever you guys need help with, I'm here. So he became a floater. He became such a good floater that they gave him promotion. Next year, he became the coordinator of the pavilion.
Awesome.
And from that week, my kids both wanted to learn Indian dances. So my daughter rolled up in a classical school to learn a classical dance. In our family, in generations, because I'm from North India, nobody learned a classical dance. So that was a big accomplishment in that sense that my daughter, I thought, oh, she's just excited. She will quit in a day or two. And then my son, he started a Bhangra group. And now he's 26 and he still have his own team. And they still perform, even though all the kids now professional working, and they still perform time to time. When I saw all that cultural change, I realized how important it is. Because no matter how hard I was working before, I couldn't connect them with our culture. But by being there, showing them indirectly, I think that attracted them. And it touched my heart. And from there, I found my passion. So with Asian women, so many years back, I think it started from Mother's Day. Then we started Lori Mela. We started celebrating South Asian women's, Asian women's accomplishment. And we end up celebrating International Women's Day. And from that, I think people were expecting more and phoning us for different type of help, which we never thought people will think of us when they need some sort of information. And that led us to the educational series, which I'm here to promote.
And I'm excited. So yeah, talking about those educational series and the different sort of programs and workshops and things that you offer, how about you just tell me a little bit about, you know, what has gone on this year that people were able to learn from? And then we can kind of look what's coming up ahead.
This year, actually, because of the many other reasons, we took a little summer off.
Nothing wrong with that.
But last year when we did educational series, the most of our seminars were related to yoga, meditation, on mental health, even physical health.
During COVID and everything, yes. Those are incredibly important.
Yes. So this year we decided we will be doing seminars, and depending on many other inquiries, we thought there is so much we can offer. So this year we will be doing seminars on definitely on mental health, meditation, because that's a routine.
Doesn't just go away.
That's not going to go away forever, because everybody looking for some sort of, especially after the COVID, I believe people are very disturbed, in depression, going through so many other traumas. We will be doing seminars, those for sure. And then the job opportunities, that's a big one for us, for single moms. Many relationships are breaking, marriages are breaking due to different reasons, but mostly, I think it's trauma. And I'm getting calls, and it's surprising that, I shouldn't say surprising, but I never went to that route, so how can I teach somebody?
Yeah, it can be shocking sometimes.
Very shocking. And people suddenly deciding, okay, I'm not going to be staying in this relationship. I'm out. And then there's a lady with kids, you know, never worked. And she doesn't know which way to go. And many women like that have no families around. They have no clue where to go, where to start. In every marriage, you invest so much in that relationship. And especially when you start having kids. And then the man starts to leave, and then lady end up with the kids. and she has no financial support, no moral support. People have no idea. So we will be bringing a lawyer this time.
Mm-hmm.
And she will be going over what steps needed to be taken if you are in this situation. And in our community, it's a very sad thing, but we lost so many lives, especially teenagers, going through different problems. And that leaves grieving families behind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very tough topic. But that is the reality of life, which we cannot avoid.
Exactly.
So I will be bringing, we will be bringing some professionals to talk on this and help people to learn how to solve these problems, how to go through this process. Because that is important in this. That's the reality of life. So we are celebrating, but at the same time, we are grieving. And I remember I lost my dad a few years back, and I still forget sometimes that he's gone, and I feel like phoning him. I need him.
Negative emotions like that, sadness or things that it's, at least as humans, it's really hard for us to let go, especially when it's a loved one, right? Sometimes it's not that they're gone. Sometimes it feels that they're just distance. They're
yes.
away somewhere, and then it would just take a moment to reconnect. And it kind of ties into nostalgia, right?
Yes.
Where we remember these positive times, and when we reminisce on those emotions, they feel real. They feel very present. As you're mentioning, it's important to have those difficult conversations and prepare
yes.
with the community to
yes.
be like, hey, life is hard sometimes, and you don't necessarily want to talk about it, but it's important to have those tools and conversations in place
yes.
so that you're in a more, what's the correct words or what's the right way to put it, that you're able to articulate those feelings a little better, that you've had an opportunity to process beforehand and develop those skills and conversations so that when it does happen, you know, you're not just scrambling.
Yes.
You're like, yes, this hurts, but now I have tools and maybe a community
yes.
that I've built
yes.
to help through that time.
So we like to have some moms who've been through that kind of pain, and it's time to learn from each other. It's a difficult situation, difficult topic, as I said, but it's an important one. It's important because we are still alive and there are other family members. And life is a blessing itself, and we like to enjoy. So how much time God has given us with somebody, we should cherish. We need to learn to cherish those moments and then move on and give back to the community. Enjoy the life, you know?
If you don't have something that inspires you or connects you to the present, to reality,
yes.
and you lose something incredibly important, you'll spiral out
yes.
and you won't have things that can help. And there's nothing wrong with feeling sad, feeling upset about that time. Take that time to grieve.
Yes.
You want that rope, that lifeline to help pull you up when you're ready.
Dealing with all these kind of topics and then preparing people, motivating them to come out, let's talk on this, and pulling ourselves out of our own little mental mess, I should say. Because sometimes you don't want to talk about this either, but then time and age, I think you learn that it's important to talk. Because if we don't talk, all the things staying in your head and making you more crazy, right?
Definitely.
Then you don't want to meet anybody. Then you don't want to talk to anyone. Then you don't just want to hide in your own corner, which is not healthy either. So we like to have a positive change, and we like to make an impact. And I think with all these past few years, I shouldn't say years, but actually months experience, and since my own dad passed away, I think it has given, I personally have given such a huge thought to this thing that, and seeing our friends suffering when they lost their kids, I think this has given me the courage that time has come that we need to make changes, not in our own daily routines, but in our education system even. Because when elderly die, I mean, it's not like you are more acceptable. But when a kid die without telling his or her parents what is the real problem, that's very sad. That saddens you more. And if kids are spending 8-9 hours away from parents in the school, we need to change a few things in the schools too. We need to change the system. We need to teach our kids the life skills. We need to ignite the passion in them, because they deserve the best. And especially immigrants, they came in this country to give a good life to their kids. And with everything going all around, and their kids getting confused, and new policies making kids more confused in so many different things, they need to learn to accept themselves, who they are. And nothing more important than this life God has given you. And you can make whatever you want to make out of it. There's no point dying or, you know, leaving this world without even telling anybody. People are here for a better life. They're not here so their kids can leave them. You know, they're working hard to give a good life to their parents, good life to the kids. And most of the time what happens, we don't even think about ourselves, because we are always thinking about our elderly and our kids. And then there's no attention
to ourselves. Yeah, self-care gets kind of put to the side.
That's important too.
Oh, I agree. Yeah, self-care is so important. And as you're talking about this, building spaces where parents and all generations, and especially kids, feel comfortable in talking about the struggles that they're having. COVID really hit kids hard, I think, being isolated at home. For those who their social batteries are recharged by going out seeing people, it was incredibly detrimental, whether it was socialization skills, being able to converse with people, or to identify their own mental health challenges or things that they're struggling with. Yeah, having those conversations. And with Asian Women of Winnipeg and other organizations, is a great place to build those communities, to build those friendships. Kids have fewer friends. Kids have fewer activities, and they're relying more and more and more on social media and technology. And that's not healthy.
Not healthy at all. That's another thing we need to remove. Not totally remove, but add more activities.
Find that balance.
And that balance will only be with if we work with the decision makers. And decision makers are making these decisions. I don't know, sometimes we feel like, and we had a discussion with many moms, whoever making this decision, maybe they don't have kids. Or maybe it's the cultural background. You see, South Asian and Asian families, many of them coming from very many joint families. You know, where in the house you will see all different age groups. And kids are okay having their siblings, having auntie, uncles, having grandparents. There is always somebody in the house talking to them, doing different things. You know, like making little things. I still have so many pictures of my own kids when they were, you know, learning how to cook, and my son sitting on the counter, and my dad giving him the rolling pin to make rotis and break the eggs. You know, it's like different kind of activities, like those little things, or planting flowers, or picking up vegetables, or going to strawberry pickup, you know, all those little things. I think they do matter. They help kids to grow. But if kid is sitting home just watching TV or playing on the phone, and parents are so much busy, I think this isolation is driving kids.
Unhealthy direction.
You got the right, that's the right word, unhealthy. And we as a human being, we need contracts. I think COVID has shown that we are not made to live alone.
There's very few people who are comfortable with being alone all the time.
And sometimes those are writers too, because you need to connect with yourself.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with having alone time.
But if you have to live alone, then people has should have gone to the jungle, you know, to live alone. That's why we have cities and we have houses and we want our friends and entertain or, you know, just to chat. And all of a sudden, everything was taken away from people and that drove them crazy. And can you believe if adult we felt isolated, right, in 2021, how about kids? They can't express themselves. They're living in a very small families. They have no company. You know what I mean? It's very important because it's hard to change 50 plus people. But at the same time, we need to invest at least in the kids because they are our future. And if they get lost in this jungle, everything will be lost. Then all our hard work, and here we are as a parent, as a community members, working hard to establish ourselves, to maintain our culture. And then if the kids are not there, if there's nobody to take the torch after you, who we are working for then?
All that effort feels for naught.
Yes. And then my friend is here today. Polly Pachu, who used to be a member, original members of Asian Women. And now she's on the advisory. But she worked with the hospital as well. And she's seeing all these kids, women, everybody seeing, going through very rough times, very depressed times, very low times. People losing confidence in themselves, you know. And it's very painful. And she will be one of our speakers too. She volunteer a lot, work with seniors in the little groups, doing different exercises. She does so many things.
Well, I just want to let you know, I'm also an interpreter because I speak four languages other than English. So I speak Punjabi, Hindi, Urdu, and Gujarati. And so I do a lot of translations for the police and for the courts. And so I see a lot of cases in Winnipeg as an interpreter. So what I have learned is that it's not easy when you come from a different country with a different backgrounds and your values and traditions are quite different when you come to a Western society, trying to get used to the Western society as well and their traditions and values. It is very important. And I think what Sharon has done, I actually appreciate what she has done. And I really, really, really command that she has done such a great job. And people are actually appreciating what Sharon has done. She has brought the community together basically by having all these cultural shows and costumes and people involving with traditions like celebrations of Diwali or Holi Mela, and there are a lot of other traditions. And as a president of the women's organization, she has accomplished a lot and she has come up with some great ideas. And because of her ideas, we are here. That's the reason why we are here today. She has accomplished a lot, and she's still trying to expand the horizons by involving more people into the organization and getting ideas from the youth and from the elderly, from the seniors. So it's just a learning experience for us.
Over 130 residential schools operated in Canada. The first federal residential school began around 1883. The last closed in 1996. We Stand Together invites Indian residential school and day school survivors, 60 Scoop and intergenerational survivors to share their truth. This project is an opportunity for those on their journeys of healing to share their experiences and perspectives, so all can learn about the effects of residential and day schools and the challenges Indigenous communities still face.
It's just how it says, circles for reconciliation, right? Circles. We do circles. We are a nonprofit organization. We have about 51%. It's Indigenous led now, whereas previously it was 50-50. We do circles by... We have five First Nations, Inuit, Métis, and five non-Indigenous people. And we have trained facilitators that are First Nations, Inuit, Métis, and non-Indigenous. And then we have the facilitators guide conversation. That's all it is this conversation and speaking about what you know about what happened to the First Nations people of this country. And then we do 10 weeks of that. They're about 90 minutes once a week to have that conversation. And we have themes. Like we have about 29 themes, I think, now, where we have, misconceptions of First Nations and Métis people. We have treaties. We have Métis themes. We have Inuit themes because it's traveling further north and across Canada, right? Of course, we have our opening vision and then a closing vision each time we have a circle.
So, Bonnie, what is both your and Grace's involvement at Circles for Reconciliation?
We do this kind of thing when there's an interest from the community, the larger community, to have a conversation about our work. Circles for Reconciliation has collaborated with Red River. Grace and I will offer a circle context for the course that the people are taking at Red River about four seasons. So we go out on the road and do public advocacy. So that's something we do together. But the other thing is we're given the opportunity to train facilitators for guiding these circles. I mean, before that, Grace and I co-facilitated. That's what we did in a number of contexts. That road of co-facilitating had us move towards being partners for the organization in this way.
Grace, why is it important to have these circles? To bring people together and have these conversations?
Because we need to be friends. Right? We need to be friends.
Simply and profoundly put, Grace.
we have to have those conversations. People that are coming into Canada need to know what happened to the First Nations people of this country. Until everybody understands, this is what I believe anyways, until everybody understands what happened in the history of colonization, residential schools, all that, is understood and everybody knows how it happened, because, I mean, Canada put us there. Everyone that comes to this country needs to know that history so that we're not continuously being judged. We're always judged. I was just judged not too long ago when I was in Thompson. Like, I walked into I'm not going to say that, but, I was judged by a person that was working in a hotel. People know that I'm First Nations, and that right away they figure that I'm going to cause some kind of scene or trouble or that kind of stuff. Discrimination, that's it. I think that once, even with that person that was discriminating against me, that once this person knew the story, or even took the time to hear the story, and then we talked amongst each other, like her and I have a conversation, right? And I learn what she feels, and then she learns how I feel. And then maybe it just kind of grows from there, right? I think.
There's a circle that I remembered being in. I think it was my first circle. And that's like a good number of years ago. And there was a man sitting in that circle from St. Vitale in Winnipeg who had never, ever, he said, during the circle, he said he had never shook hands with a First Nations person. He said that in the circle. He said, I've never actually shaken hands. And so one of the first, I think it was an Ojibwe man in the circle, he stood up, he walked across the circle, which is kind of breaking the rules of circle because we stay put, but whatever. I thought it was beautiful. He stood up, he walked across, he put out his hand, and that man from St. Vitale shook his hand and then actually broke and just stood up, and the two men just hugged. And While I tell that story, I'm actually sad that I think that's actually representative of so many people in this city. We live in our little small bubbles, and those bubbles have some kind of protective barrier around them called us and them. And when you live in that bubble, you actually need something intentional to poke it. And I think Circles for Reconciliation has a way of poking the bubble and getting us to step out of it.
Conversations like this are so important. recently in Australia, there was talks and a referendum to add Indigenous and First Nations people of that country into the Constitution. However, that was voted down. We're seeing around the world a constant fight between governments and the First Nations, First Peoples of the land. That's why conversations like this are so important. So walk me through what the conversations look like at these circles. What sort of feelings and things are people bringing up? I'm just very curious.
Well, just going back to one of the themes, the first thing is getting to know you, because the circles are based on how we used to speak in council and, you know, with each other. When someone is speaking, nobody interrupts. We wait until that person is finished. They can hold either, in our circles, either the eagle feather, the talking stick. Mostly in circles, we use the talking stick. And when someone is talking, everybody is very respectful to listen to what that person is saying. And in our circle, well, we always state that it's not a place where we judge each other. It's a place where we learn from each other. We learn how we feel. We learn how we thought. And even if it's a bad thing, like if somebody is thinking bad, it's okay to say it in that circle because it's a safe place. And we want to make sure that we state that when we have those circles to the people. And then what happens at the end of the 10 weeks is maybe the first 5 weeks conversation is a little slim, like nobody really wants to say anything. But after that, it's usually the friendship begins, right? It takes a while for people to get to know each other in that circle. And then by the end of the 10 weeks, we are friends. Like, look at me and Bonnie. She can't get rid of me now. Right?
I did eat the raisins of your cinnamon bun this morning. It's true. We have become good friends. Mm-hmm. And I echo that. I so echo that. Slim, that's a good word. The conversations are slim in the beginning, but I think that's the only way you can start. We start slim because the divide has become so big. And there's so much on the settler side of life. We're walking around. I just had a conversation recently with a young man, and he said, I'm so nervous around First Nations people. I'm going to say the wrong thing. And then as we listen underneath all of that, I think us settlers are hauling around is we're hauling around a ton of shame. And I think, in fact, just naming that and recognizing that is important. What kinds of privilege have we gained off the back of that harsh story? Just be honest about it. Don't push it away. Be honest about it. But then what circles or any path of questing for more understanding, once you find yourself in a place of learning more and be building relationships in that context, that shame accompanied by knowledge and understanding, accompanied by relationship, turns. And now all of a sudden you're living your day-to-day life with responsibilities. Responsibilities to be curious. Responsibilities to step into in a moment like where a clerk or a store is all of a sudden following a First Nations. We'll start following the clerk. And how are you doing there, buddy? Like, I don't know. There are moments where you intervene. There are moments where you become curious. But your sense of responsibility builds instead of a shame thing that makes you go all small and nervous and in the bubble.
What does reconciliation even look like for someone who's non-Indigenous, born here in Canada, or a newcomer, immigrant, or refugee coming here to Canada? What sort of role do they play in that journey of reconciliation? Grace, what does that look like?
Well, for me, you have to define reconciliation. Like, a lot of definitions have been thrown around when it comes to reconciliation by many, many people. But on my part, I had to let's say the settlers part, let's go there. They need to reconcile with their feelings when they come into this country. Like, say, okay, yeah, sure, I'm going to have a you know, I have money, I can have a big house, I can have big whatever, and that's okay, right? That's okay. You can have all that, but you also, what needs to happen is that you need to understand the First Nations people. The most important thing to us was our land, right? Everything here is built out of the land. Like all these, somehow some scientists and created these microphones and these desks and these fancy gadgets, but it all comes from the land. And anywhere you live, you have to live on the land, and a lot of stuff that you grow comes from the land, and your animals come, they have to eat off the land, right? So it's, for me, the first thing I need to do, I need to reconcile with that too, is because I left my home quite a while in Goslake Narrows, and I live in a community that's non-Indigenous. It's very non-Indigenous community. And it took them a while to get used to me being in that community. I had to work at that. You know, I had to do the work and say, okay, you know what? I am First Nations, but I'm not a bad person, right? I can work in this town. I can have a job in this town. I can build a house in this town. I can have my own home. I have what I need to have in that community. Although, because of people not understanding and not having that conversation with me, people either were over the edge trying to be friendly or not at all. Or some people were very good and just say, yeah, okay, so you're First Nations, so what? I'm from Russia. Let's be friends, right? So that's what it means, if that makes any sense at all.
Something that I have learned from my friendship with Grace around land, what I hear from her, like where I live on a farm. I'm a, and we work land and we take care of that land. And what I hear from Grace is that the influence that First Nations people want to have on the majority of the influence is, it's not necessarily that no one actually owns that land. That's what I'm learning. We don't own land. We tend and we acknowledge the gift that it gives us. And I think that spirit of learning is what is the biggest power that I'm hearing First Nations wants to have with non-Indigenous people. Stop seeing land as a commodity. It isn't. It's your gift giver, and live that way. And that's a shift for lots of us. And the other thing I've witnessed, Grace was a big influencer to bring the feather into the court system. And what I learned from watching Grace's walk with that, I asked her once, well, I think, how long did it take? And I believe you said, what, between 9 and 13 years?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And then I asked her, well, I could just ask you, right? Like, I asked her, what gave you the patience? And her answer to me was profound, and it rang so true. She said, I know who I am, and I know to whom and what I belong.
Yeah, it took a while.
Why was it important for you, Grace, to get the feather into the courts?
Well, in the court system, you know, people come in and they swear on the Bible. I mean, that is one of our most painful experiences, is the Bible. And then sometimes people come in and affirm. And when a First Nations person comes into a courtroom, it's very intimidating. I had to swear on the Bible in court one time to be an interpreter. That threw my whole day off. I couldn't even think in Cree. I was like, oh my God, I'm touching this Bible, right? So at that point, I thought, okay, this is not good for First Nations people that have been harmed by those churches, and that it's important for a person to have that strength to sit in a courtroom, right? And I thought, well, the eagle feather gave me strength. It gave Elijah Harper strength to say no, right? Which is kind of cool. And I thought, well, some First Nations people would bring their own feather into the court system. And I can see what it did when they were holding their eagle feather. And it was important to bring it into the court system, because this is the reality of it, is most of our people are the ones that are going into the justice system. They go into the CFS system, into the justice system, and nothing that they believe in is being addressed. Nothing is being addressed. Now I can go on about that, but let's go back to the eagle feather. And when it wasn't an easy task to bring it into the into the course because we had to do some convincing. I had help. It wasn't just me. There was a Queen's Bench judge, provincial judge, and the executive director of courts that we worked painlessly to do this, right? We had to convince both sides, not just the court system. We had to convince the First Nations people that this would be a good thing. And I approached all the languages of Manitoba, having that question of both Eagle Feather and the court system. And in the end, I made that decision to say, you know what, it needs to be in there because it's about the people going to court. It's about that person holding the Eagle Feather and what it means to them to tell the truth, because that's what it is. When you hold that Eagle Feather, you tell the truth. And basically, it's very simple. When you go, you know, you swear in the Bible, you affirm. And with the Eagle Feather, you say, I promise to tell the truth. While holding or in front of the Eagle Feather.
I'd like to explore more about what you mentioned there, the continued struggle that we're seeing within the court systems between, like, this fight between the courts and Indigenous First Nations, Métis, Inuit peoples, whether that's fighting over, like, unceded lands, protecting places in terms of logging, fresh water, stuff like that. You know, when we're looking at our society, Indigenous peoples are often overrepresented in either homelessness or addictions, you know, due to various factors. But it always comes down to this kind of fight for human rights, which is why conversations like this are so important to not only increase awareness, but bring those conversations back up to the court system and fight for people's equality.
I notice, I just saying that to my husband this morning, I said, you know, I'm getting tired because it seems like as First Nations people, we're always fighting for what we need, our rights, right? Why is it that we are the Canadians of this country and we still have to go to court system to fight for what we need, you know, clean drinking water, you know, our kids to be better taken care of, shelters for the unsheltered people. Like, why is it we always have to be fighting? There is a point where this morning I thought I should just go back to the bush.
Yeah.
But you know, it wouldn't be that easy either. It's not that easy to live off the land up there anymore because it's been destroyed so much by our hydro, you know, like the dams that were built and land is being was destroyed. And I know that trap lines were destroyed because of that. And, you know, there's the sustenance that First Nations people had is not that healthy anymore. Like even the drinking water that my brother thought he had good drinking water because they had brought in the wells, apparently the water was not good. So now they have to go to court to fight. It's like it's continuously having to fight. Why is it that we are the ones that have to fight for it? Right? Why can't somebody else say, you know what, this is what, stop fighting, just give it to them.
Yeah, why it's almost controversial to have these conversations around human rights. And when we're looking at the court systems, it feels like sometimes it's just this arduous process that's meant to tire you out and inevitably cause you to quit.
Yeah, yeah. It's exhausting. It is exhausting, but it's worth it. To see a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, well, anyways.
Yeah, right? I know the something that's a constant thread between our friendship is we look for work that doesn't exhaust us. Actually, like an example would be we are going to be co-facilitating a circle for this Red River project, which I could just put a big shout out for. I think it's an amazing project. And Keystone Agriculture, like the leads, I think, from Keystone Agriculture have all taken these courses, which are engaged similar sort of modules to they're learning the story. They're dipping themselves deeper into the story between settlers and between First Nations, Métis and Inuit people. Grace and I will co-facilitate circles together to be witness to people getting understanding about what the heck went on. It's actually like strangely life-giving. And it gives us at least... We look to each other for the kind of work that will help balance out the exhaustion of the constant fight, because I think that's a big thing I've learned from Grace. Even though you say it would be extremely difficult to go back to the land with all of the pressure that land has had, but I've also heard from you often, I just really need to go to my cabin, or I need to go to the lake, or I need to go into the bush. And you've taught me that even the land that is there will the land that is the trees that are standing, they still do feed us. Even in all the brokenness that's gone, you know, before us.
One thing good about this, what the circles also is doing, that organizations are doing their own circles within their organization, mm-hmm. and that is good, because it's a slow start, I think, with this part, because it's like at the grassroots level, right?
Yeah, like the provinces.
Yeah.
The province has, what are they starting? We've had eight?
We have eight more to do.
Eight more to do, and we've done nine,
yeah.
I think. The provincial government has sat in nine circles so far, which means that 90 people in the province have sat down and deepened their understanding and conversation. We can't control how that impacts the way they lead, but we at least feel like we've taken responsibility to create context for them to learn that and to build relationships, yeah.
Yeah, the other one we did that was the Museum of Human Rights, and some of the schools are starting their own. So it's a slow process, but at least it's spreading, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right now, it kind of feels like we're at the beginning of change, if that makes sense. It feels like finally enough people have had their eyes opened to what's going on in this country.
And the good thing about Circles for Reconciliation, like our organization, it's mostly volunteers, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, it is.
Mostly volunteers. We only have like about 6 paid staff, maybe 2 full-time, and the rest are all part-time. Mm-hmm. And it's pulling people, you know, the volunteer to help out, which is really...
Actually, that just has me think of one thing I feel really proud about our organization is how grassroots connected it is. Where Tommy, the event we hosted at Tommy Prince showed that in spades. The amount of First Nations people and Métis people and Inuit people who carried that event, it was outstanding. I just stood there often throughout that day, marveling at the strength. Like the artisans, the dancers, the musicians, the speakers, the teachings that we were offered that day through the strength of the way in which all the pressures, the ability to just keep telling the story, to keep telling the story that is theirs. And that is another interesting challenge, I feel, not challenge, but a nudge, is that when I watch Grace own and hold on and articulate and keep her language and her stories, I'm challenged actually to listen to my own. I'm challenged to try to understand my own. I'm challenged to understand my own story, my own, and not to say that to make it better or to pit it against, but actually just to get to understand my own roots. And not to make Grace's roots my roots, just to be truly celebrate the uniqueness of our roots.
You know what's really cool is, pardon my language, really cool. I'm still talking back in the 70s.
Cool is still a word.
We use cool all the time. Don't worry about it.
Okay, go for it. Go. What's happening?
Bonnie is raising a Cree girl. And the amount of Cree that Bonnie has learned is really amazing, alongside with her.
Well, how have I learned that Cree? How have I learned that in Inuit, Grace?
Because you have the drive to learn it, because you are with a First Nations person. You live with one.
Yes.
So you have the drive.
But I also have the support from you, just going to say.
So it's pretty cool how she can say the words, except for Ekosani.
Ekosani. No, I'm getting better. Ekosani.
Okay, she's got it now.
And now Ekosani means... Like, thank you. Yeah, we have, Grace has helped, her name is Aja. Aja and I put together our Orange Shirt Day, a presentation, Naskometuan, which is the word for treaty.
It's really
and the whole presentation has to do with the meaning of treaties.
Well, thank you, Grace. Ekosani, I
could never have done any of that without you. Just going to say.
How about we wrap things up with the YouTube link that you sent me? I think it was called I Wish in Anemamoan. I probably said that wrong.
When she first came to me with that book and I started reading it, I thought, this woman is crazy.
Nice, thanks.
How can I taste the stars? No, but then once I started reading the book and started translating it, it became quite fun, actually. You know, and what the thought that came from the child that was thinking those things. And I thought those very same things when I was a child, like, the star is so high. What if the world flipped over and I fell through the clouds? Where would I end up? Kind of thing. Like, so there was those crazy thoughts. So when I started translating the book, it was actually quite fun.
My piece of it is that when I first met Grace, I was actually a little bit nervous to tell. Not just nervous. It was one of those settler shame things. There was a really, really deep and wide story about how Aja, a Cree and Dene girl, got into our life. And I felt part of being involved in Circle was to create a deeper and wider context for Aja to grow up inside of her story. When I met Grace, soon after she poured me the cup of tea, I said to her, I just want to lay it all out here. We adopted a Cree Dene girl, like right at the same time when the Truth and Reconciliation put out that, you know, reunification was the absolute, the core of reconciliation. Anyway, it all came out that this little girl that we have has roots in Grace's community. Her father is from God's Lake Narrow. And so Grace, when I showed her this book that I want to translate, Grace said, oh, well, I have to, because she needs to learn our Cree.
Yeah, that's right. Because yeah.
Tani Kata, Wasame Nowats, Miskisakwa. On and on.
Yeah.
So Aja and I spent just every context we could to learn the Cree for that book from Grace. And I think the next time we write a book, though, a children's book together, it's going to start the other way around. We wrote it in English and then had it translated to Cree. And I learned a lot through that process that the languages are very, very different. We could get into that. But for now, we'll just say, there's a huge difference between Cree. And so in order to really truly communicate a book through Innu, it should be written in Innu or spoken in Innu.
In Manitoba alone, we have about three dialects of Cree, so the TH and the N and the Y, like the Plains Cree. And then, of course, there's different idiolects from those, right? So the language is slightly different in each community. And it's important to know where you come from. Very important to know where you come from.
You're right. And that little shout out to that, Indigenous Languages of Manitoba published this book. And so if anyone wants to have access to it, they go through that organization.
Hey, thanks for listening. Make sure you tune in every Tuesday at 1 p.m. to find out more about what's happening in your community. I'm Ryan Funk. This was U Talk. And have yourself a good one.